Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour, bringing you some musical notes to mark the second Sunday in Advent, shining the spotlight on a Jesuit saint from Chile with a cardinal who personally met him, and joining our popular Latin lover for our weekly rendezvous. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. It is with regret that I begin today by bringing you sad news reaching us from Moscow, where early Friday morning His Holiness Patriarch Alexis II passed away. Let's listen to Pope Benedict XVI's message of tribute read for us by Sean Patrick Lovett.
I was profoundly saddened to receive news of the death of His Holiness Alexei II, Patriarch of Moscow and of all the Russias, and with fraternal affection I wish to convey to the Holy Synod and to all the members of the Russian Orthodox Church my most sincere condolences, assuring you of my spiritual closeness at this very sad time. In my prayer I beseech the Lord to welcome into His kingdom of eternal peace and joy this tireless servant, and to grant consolation and comfort to all those who mourn his passing. Mindful of the common commitment to the path of mutual understanding and cooperation between Orthodox and Catholics, I am pleased to recall the efforts of the late Patriarch for the rebirth of the Church after the severe ideological oppression which led to the martyrdom of so many witnesses to the Christian faith. I also recall his courageous battle for the defense of human and gospel values, especially in the European continent, and I trust that his commitment will bear fruit in peace and genuine progress, human, social, and spiritual. At this sad time of loss, as his mortal remains are consigned to the earth, in the sure hope of resurrection, may the memory of this servant of the gospel of Christ be a support for those who are now in sorrow and an encouragement for those who will benefit from his spiritual legacy as leader of the venerable Russian Orthodox Church. With fraternal affection in the risen Lord, Benedict XVI.
Also on Friday morning, Philippa Hitchens spoke to the head of the Vatican's Council for Promoting Christian Unity, Cardinal Walter Kasper. Let's listen.
A committed pastor who led his church through the challenges of transition from the Soviet era to the present day. That's how the head of the Vatican's Council for Christian Unity, Cardinal Walter Kasper, describes the late patriarch in a telegram of condolences sent to the Russian Orthodox Church in Moscow on Friday. As the Holy See's top spokesman for ecumenical dialogue, the cardinal travelled many times to meet with Patriarch Alexis. During his last visit to Moscow in June, he gave the Russian Orthodox leader a letter from Pope Benedict, who warmly welcomed the growing closeness between the two churches. In the telegram, Cardinal Kasper says the Patriarch's personal commitment to improved relations with the Catholic Church has never been in doubt, despite the difficulties and tensions which have emerged over the years.
I met him several times already when I was Bishop in Stuttgart, several times in my present capacity as President of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity. The meetings with him were always very kind and friendly, and I never had thought that he desires a rapprochement between the Russian Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church, notwithstanding all difficulties and sometimes also tensions. But his general desire was clear.
How will he be remembered, do you think, both in the Orthodox world and beyond?
He was one of the important leaders of the Church in a period of transition from the communist period to the present situation. He had to reconstruct the Church after the breakdown of communism and to reconstruct many dioceses, parishes, monasteries, education institutions. And at the end he saw that the institutional reconstruction is not enough, that the spiritual renewal is necessary. So we recommend now His Holiness Patriarch Galassi to the misericord of God, and that he may recompense all what he did in a long and committed ministry to the Church.
Cardinal Walter Kasper will lead a delegation from the Vatican to the funeral of Patriarch Alexis II in Moscow later this week. I'm Philippa Hitchin.
Meanwhile, on a lighter note, here in the Vatican on Thursday, Pope Benedict XVI received in audience the bishops from Chile, who were in Rome this past week for their ad limina visit. Charles Collins has the story.
Chile, on the western coast of South America, has over 16 million people, of which over 70% are Catholic. Pope Benedict said the modern world needs examples of holiness, and that the holiness of all the members of the Church, especially her shepherds, is one of the most precious gifts the hierarchy can give to society.
Por eso la santidad de todos los miembros de la Iglesia, y especialmente de sus pastores, es uno de los dones.
He invited the bishops to cultivate an intense interior life, to deepen their faith, and to get to know Christ in prayer. He said this must also be cultivated in priests and asked that the priesthood give the highest attention to prayer and to the celebration of the Eucharist. Pope Benedict then turned his attention to the laity, who he says have received as a specific vocation the sanctification of the world. The Holy Father said all the sectors of society can be visionaries with the light of faith. He specifically named the world of culture, science, and politics. He encouraged the laity in their efforts to promote the family founded on the marriage between a man and a woman, to promote just working conditions, to give help to the disadvantaged, to care for the environment, and to defend a human life in all the phases of its existence. Pope Benedict also encouraged the charitable work of the bishops in helping the poor. The Catholic Church in Chile consists of 27 dioceses and 57 bishops, including retired bishops and auxiliary bishops. I'm Charles Collins.
Well, thanks there to Charles Collins. And now, as we've just heard Pope Benedict speak of role models for the Catholic Church in Chile, I thought I'd like to share with you a conversation I once had with Jesuit Cardinal Roberto Tucci, focusing around the figure of a Chilean saint by the name of Alberto Hurtado Cruchaga, a charismatic figure whom Cardinal Tucci personally met in the first half of the 20th century when he was studying in Louvain. But do stay tuned to find out more as I tell this story, which I've chosen to begin with the voice of the late Pope John Paul II, the Roman pontiff who gave Chile its second saint when he travelled there in April 1985. He did so by Alberto Hurtado Cruchaga's monumental tomb, right behind the central station in the urban hinterland of Chile's capital, Santiago.
En el curso de mi visita pastoral a la iglesia en Chile,
Pope John Paul II speaking in Spanish during a pastoral journey to Chile. The date was April the 3rd, 1987.
Siervo de Dios, Padre Alberto Hurtado Cruchaga.
Alberto Hurtado Cruchaga. The man who founded this Latin American nation's largest charity, the Hogar de Cristo.
Hogar de Cristo.
In English, Christ's home, which today numbers over 20 affiliates in Santiago alone, and many others across Latin America, and indeed across the world, including the United States and Australia.
It's a tomb where Chileans still flock to pray, to pay tribute to this tall, charismatic figure, famous for his charity work. Years on, people still remember how he roamed the streets of Santiago with his green pickup truck, seeking out the homeless under the bridges of the Mapocho River to offer them a bed in the hogar, or home. But who exactly was this man, also described as scholar, teacher, youth leader, trade unionist? I asked a fellow Jesuit who personally knew him.
He made a very great impression as a man, certainly of deep spirituality. But what really impressed us more was the fact that he was so interested in social justice.
Cardinal Roberto Tucci met Father Alberto as a young theology student at the University of Louvain in Belgium in the late 1940s. Father Tucci shares with us his impressions.
And he was in Belgium in order to brush up his formation in social doctrine of the Church, because when, he had studied in Louvain as a young Jesuit, he finished his theological studies in Louvain and then went back to his country after 10 years of absence. And he found a country so different from Belgium of that time, because in Belgium, social justice was well promoted, but in Chile, the social situation was very poor, let's say. And so he started promoting trade unions, inspired, let's say, by Christian principles.
También en esto nos ilumina la figura del Padre Hurtado.
He wrote books about justice, the problems of the homeless, the problems of the servants in different families, the workers in the factories. And then at the same time, he was promoting very strongly human Christian culture. He founded Mensaje. Mensaje is a kind of monthly magazine which is still existing, run by Chilean Jesuits, to spread Christian doctrine and most especially to treat also social problems of the country at that moment. So he's a very rich personality.
Poet Gabriela Mistral called him a natural Franciscan. His life story, with his ability to convince the wealthy to loosen their purse strings for the poor, suggests a trickier epithet, that of a natural Jesuit.
Very also convincing with the rich people, not all of them, but rich people were more, let's say, Christian in their mentality, to oblige them to discover the real consequences of their faith in Christ, which was to recognize Christ in the poor of the Chilean society. But certainly what impressed us more when he visited us in Louvain was this main preoccupation of social justice in a very Christian way. I mean, he was always starting with the gospel. The fact that the poor is Christ, that for that reason he was moved by his own faith to put his life at disposal, especially of the less privileged classes in his own country.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you said, he tried to abolish that gap between a Christian ideal and the reality of the workplace. He was ahead in his ideals, wasn't he, for the time in Chile? There was a huge social contrast in those days, no?
After the Vatican II, the Council of Vatican II, we are more or less, say, already in that line. So today it is not such a novelty of what he was thinking and doing in his own life, Father Hurtado. But at that moment of history of his country and generally the sensibility of the Christian Church for the social problems were not so deeply diffused as they are today. So I think that it is difficult to make a comparison. I mean, today he can move us, but it is not such a novelty as he was in his own time. It was his face which moved him the most. I mean, he was a very spiritual person. He was very good in preaching spiritual exercises, both to intellectuals, to students in the university, and even to poor people. So you know that, for example, his own sentence, the Mass was his life. And his life was the continuation of the Mass. But he was drawing from a deep innaissance and Christian, let's say, spirituality, the force to face all those problems in which he was involved. Think that he was so young, I mean, when he died. I mean, 51 years old only, yeah? And he has achieved so much, I mean. In a time when all these problems were not so largely considered in the Christian communities, I mean, in many countries.
And on Sunday, October 23rd, 2005, this man, who was once described as God's visit to Chile, became a visit to the whole world. Our thanks there to Cardinal Roberto Tucci for sharing with us his personal impressions of fellow Jesuit Chilean saint Alberto Hurtado Cruchaga, who lived during the first half of the 20th century. And now on a totally different note, as promised earlier, time to enjoy some musical notes to bring Advent in. For that, we turn to music historian Monsignor Philip Whitmore.
Repent and be baptized. The Lord is at hand. With these words, John the Baptist burst onto the scene on the banks of the River Jordan, dressed in camel hair with a leather belt round his waist. He must have cut quite a remarkable figure. On the second Sunday of Advent, our liturgy focuses on this powerful preacher, the one who came to prepare the way for the coming of the Lord, to make his paths straight. In proclaiming his message, of course, John was continuing in the line of the Old Testament prophet, particularly Isaiah. Long before John was born, Isaiah had spoken of a voice crying in the wilderness, "Prepare a way for the Lord, make his paths straight. Every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill made low, the crooked straight, and the rough places plain." That music comes near the beginning of Handel's Messiah. Starting with the prophecies of Isaiah, Handel takes us through the Christmas story and on through the Passion, the Resurrection, and the glorification of Christ. No wonder there are so many performances of Handel's Messiah at this time of year. If you get a chance to listen to one, it's a good way of preparing for Christmas and reflecting on the deeper meaning of the Incarnation. Some of the hymns we sing during Advent take the preaching of John the Baptist as a starting point. On Jordan's bank, the Baptist's cry announces that the Lord is nigh. Come then and hearken, for he brings glad tidings from the King of Kings. As we prepare for the Lord's coming, we do well to make a straight path for him in our own hearts by repenting of our sins and turning back to him. That, after all, was John the Baptist's message. The next verse of the hymn takes up this theme. Even though we sing it only once a year, it's a popular hymn and one that people find easy to remember. That's partly because the same tune is used again on Palm Sunday to the words, ride on in majesty. It's an old German tune adapted for these two very different English texts during the Victorian period. Another popular hymn from the same period begins, like this one, with a reference to John the Baptist. The thrilling voice which seems to say, Christ is nigh. Advent is a beautiful season, and a surprisingly short one, just over 3 weeks altogether. There's plenty of fine Advent music to listen to in that short time. It's a real shame that so often, instead of focusing on Advent, we find ourselves singing Christmas carols all through December. Do try and avoid doing that if you can. It's like opening the presents early.
Big thank you there, as always, to Monsignor Philip Whitmore. Monsignor Whitmore is a music historian currently working at the Vatican's Secretariat of State. Finally, our weekly rendezvous with our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster.
Listen, I have a dictionary here, and it says here, under Latin, thieves Latin. Thieves, like thieves. Thieves, people who steal. And it says, jargon employed as a secret language by rogues and vagabonds.
But that's not the Latin language. This is like a dialect of something here.
Oh, it says Latin. It's under
like
Latin.
Like we used to say pig Latin.
What's pig Latin?
I mean, what the parents used to talk to you so the children wouldn't understand. we'd switch around the syllables.
So what?
I mean, which one really wasn't Latin? I mean, it's they just didn't know what they were doing.
Okay.
I mean, they developed their own jargon, but it has nothing to do with Latin.
And what about dog Latin?
What do they say about dog Latin?
Pretended or mongrel Latin. An excellent example is Stephen's definition of a kitchen. As the law classically expresses it, a kitchen is, quote, camera necessaria pro usus cucare. Cum sauce panis, stew panis, sculero, dressero, stovis, smoke jacko.
Oh, yeah. Well, I see there's a kind of, yeah, okay.
That's fooling around.
Yeah.
Fooling around with Latin.
Yeah.
How do you say fool around with Latin?
Yeah. Nugari. Lingua nugari. Yeah, nugor. To have jokes with the language. Well, we don't do that, but anyway.
Here I see that they have new Latin. Latin written since 1500s.
Mm.
1500s, you call that new?
Well, I mean, yes, yeah. I mean, now, yeah. But there's a big movement up in Northern Europe, the Neulatin, where they talk about, let's say, the 16, 1700s as New Latin, the whole scientific revolution that was written in New Latin.
Mm. And instead of which here, they have classical Latin here in this dictionary. And they describe it as the Latin of the best authors centered around the golden or Augustan age, as Livy, Cicero, etc. Mm. Horace, Virgil, Ovid, those are the only ones they quote. I'm not quite sure why. If you had to choose some music to describe classical Latin.
I see.
And other music to describe new Latin from the 1500s on, which composers would you choose?
That wouldn't be too difficult. It wouldn't be too difficult. I mean, you'd get Livy, you'd get, you know, like Wagner. Wagner would be very heavy, like Livy is heavy. But then you get lighter stuff. Like Pliny would be like Mendelssohn.
So it's less of a difference between the classical Latinists and the new Latinists, and more of a difference between the actual personalities of the various Latinists.
Yes. It's the same language. And that's what my students get. We do the same thing from 200 BC to the year 2000. So they see it's the same, basically the same language. The vocabulary expanded and a few uses were simplified, but otherwise...
Heartfelt thanks there once again to our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, the Pope's own Latinist. And that brings us up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for listening. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.